quite right too. Moving on, we move dexterously to the events department of the University of Lincoln. Hopefully you don't mind, Anna, because it's always important.
No.
They've got such fabulous things that's going on. Lincoln Lives is serious, which just fantastic. I mean, I was almost lost for words there.
Yeah,
so lost for words, but never mind. Welcome back, Natalie.
Thank you.
When it was your first debut production, of course, we had sunshine and all sorts of things, but we are in the Northern Hemisphere, and that's why it's a little bit dark now.
It is, yes.
Anyway, apart from stressing the blooming obvious, would you like to share with us what exciting things are coming up, first of all, as far as the Great Life series is concerned?
Yes, of course. So we have the wonderful Michael Mosley will be joining us on the 11th of December, opening one of our newly built buildings, the Sarah Swift Building, during the day. And then in the afternoon, he'll be delivering a Great Lives talk all about his career and his life. Which the staff, students and general public are invited to.
And the great thing is, of course, it's completely free.
It is completely free,
even
yes.
Anna Lewis can actually get on the plane from Jersey and attend, and it won't cost her a penny.
Exactly.
Apart from transport, obviously, because much as I'd love to actually cover the cost of your transport, Anna, I'm afraid.
It's not going to work.
Anyway, Michael Mosley, just share with us a little bit about what he's actually done, background and so on. I know you've got your facts and figures there to the fore, so go on, Natalie.
Yes, so Michael Mosley is the wonderful British television producer. He's probably most famous for the diet, the 5-2 diet that he's publicised, but the talk that he'll be delivering is more about his career as a whole. Mm. And how he's got to the success that he's in.
And just clarifying, the 5-2 diet doesn't mean you actually start eating at 5 to the hour and end at 2 minutes past the hour.
I think that's where I went wrong.
It's simply a case of, I think, 5 days on, 2 days off, and lines
yes.
from that in terms of you detox and work through the process from that perspective. It's all very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, Anna. Back in the day, open days were very much to the fore. We've talked about how your daughter experienced the joys of open day, which is one of the reasons I think she went to the University of Kent at Canterbury. Is that right?
Yes, she did.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun there.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sure it is. Not as much fun as the University of Lincoln, but then I would say that as a matter of course. Talk to us, Natalie, about open days and the difference between an open day, when we're all open, and an applicant's open day.
Yes, of course. The open days is to showcase what we as a university can do and to showcase Lincoln as well and give a wide understanding of what the student can experience here in Lincoln. The offer holder days or the applicant days are invite only to those prospective students that are holding an offer with us. So it's for them to find out a little bit more about the course that they're hoping to study and to meet new friends and the academics. And it's a little bit more personalised programme than an open day. So it gets right down to the nitty-gritty of the course.
As I frequently shared, back in the 20th century, the last thing I actually wanted was for my parents to actually come along to open days. I sort of did it all from my one's own perspective. Anna, what was your sort of view from the whole open day? Let's find out which institution is going to be blessed by me for the next 3 or 4 years.
Strawberry Hill, which is the first degree I took my
University of Strawberry Hill these
university
days.
University now, St Mary's, but it was very... It was very old-fashioned. I remember going from room to room, and the big thing for me was it was more or less you'd applied and you went. It wasn't an open day as such. You actually did go there because you'd applied, and they were interviewing. And I remember Joan Riley, who was the English lecturer, giving everyone like 10 minutes of her time trying to explain the various components, and it was in a room with a coffin that was propped up against the wall. And
we have spoken
alarming.
About this before, and
yes,
astonishingly, Julie Corden has not actually, as far as I'm aware, Natalie, and you might want to sort of chase this one up. I don't think we're seeing any coffins actually at the open day.
No, I did not place my order for coffins.
No, it's not an advisable prop. I'm sure it puts students off. It certainly made me worried anyway.
I don't know. I mean, you could have the line, people will kill to get in here, but you know, people are dying to get in here. I mean, there are so many lines you could actually have to spread the word.
It'd create a lasting impression, but I'm not sure it's the correct one that we want to give.
It's a way forward. So as a parent, let's wear your parental hat, Anna, for the moment. What do you look for? What would you have looked for in terms of, this is where my child is going to actually spend £9,000 of my money. So,
exactly.
These days, what sort of questions would you ask?
I think the important thing is that everyone who's involved in the open day, be it the applicant's open day or the other one, is that everyone wears a smile, because those are the first words you see out of someone's mouth, is a smile. If you see grumpy people at an open day, you wonder what it's all about, and you think people have been pushed into helping and showing people around. But I think good signage is critical. You need to know where you're going, and if you're herding people around from place to place. Unfortunately, the campus at Canterbury Christchurch has an art department in a gallery in the middle of the high street. So people were being told to go there, but they weren't given very good instructions as to how to get there. So, you know, if there are art buildings on a sprawling campus, then you need to make sure everyone's got directions to get from A to B. And obviously timing, you know, say you allow 20 minutes to get from one end of the campus to the other, does help.
Now, I'm fairly certain that we tick most of those boxes, Natalie, but perhaps you'd like to just respond there, because obviously Anna has not had the pleasure of actually coming to either an open day or an applicant's open day here at Lincoln.
Oh, Anna needs to do that.
yeah.
So our open days, we do put a lot of signage out around campus, and we do have a lot of student ambassadors as well that are quite happy to sherry people around.
And they smile.
And they do smile. They're happy.
They do
smile.
Good. Yeah.
Our offer holder days, they very much do group them with the student ambassadors. So they are walked from building to building, which I think
some might say it's a security escort, but obviously I'm not going to sort of go down that line with stories. It's like a whole experience, which is worthwhile working through. And certainly, as the number of buildings has continued to grow within Lincoln, it's important that, yes, you do have a note. And there are also campus maps around. I'm noticing these days people are actually using their mobile devices as well more and more to kind of locate where they are.
Yeah, we do have an online map as well, so that's
It just shows, you know, by 2045, artificial intelligence will make the whole thing redundant. People have said that actually the Midweek drivers are on my artificial intelligence for a good few years now. What the hey? Anna, it's been splendid as ever. I gather that Eva McDonald is on her way but is stuck in traffic.
Oh, there we are.
She's walking. Lord knows what's happening out there. Still, never mind. Who knows whether Tessa Snott and Hannah Brown will actually turn up these days. It's just a whole new world. But thankfully, Natalie is with us. We'll be going over to Louisiana. Oh, actually, St. Louis, to be precise. St. Louis, which is connected with Al Wyman in a matter of moments. Have you got any questions you'd like us to put to Al Wyman, this American reporter? I just briefly talked through the whole. So best known for his reports on the Charles Manson murders, Wyman and his television crew discovered the clothes discarded by the killers on a hillside in Beverly Hills. As a result, Wyman was referenced in Helter Skelter and was portrayed in the television film based on the case.
I think the whole thing is worrying. All this sort of, it's almost become an industry, hasn't it? Horror, murders and all that thing.
You've got whole channels on CBS Action, which I think, please,
oh,
you know,
dear,
we don't want to get inside the mind of a criminal. Let's focus on more positive things.
Exactly. No, it's, not good. Gruesome stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Still, someone's got to do it.
As ever, Anna, you have encapsulated with a short, pithy phrase from the Jersey department there. Someone's got to do it. The ultimate line of Solaris from that perspective. And we appreciate you all the more for it. So I'll put those last two questions to you. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Thank you very much, I have.
And will you be back with us next week?
I would love to. Thanks for the offer. Cheers.
Marvellous.
Is the song Charles Manson stole from the Beatles? We're stealing it back. When you get to the bottom, you go back to the top of the slide, and you stop, and you turn, and you go for a ride. Then you get to the bottom, then you see me again. Yeah. answer.
As they said in the intro, this is one that Charles Manson stole from the Beatles. We're stealing it back. U2's version of Helter Skelter there, taking us neatly round and seamlessly to a soul who's got a fascinating tale of all manner of routines. Ace American reporter, a winner of three Emmy Awards from the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, and two Golden Globe Awards from the Southern California Radio TV News Association. It's the amazingly talented Al Wyman. How are you, Al?
Great. How are things across the pond?
Well, we're okay. I mean, you know, here we are, time slots just coming up to 15 minutes past 5 o'clock, 5 p.m. in Lincoln, England, and I think we're probably just getting the first signs that winter is on its way.
Definitely.
Oh, well, we haven't really gotten anything that bad yet, winter-wise.
Well, I always like to feel that we can meet up in St. Louis, as Judy Garland said, clang, 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 went that trolley. But we're not here to talk about great Hollywood musicals.
Right.
We're here to talk, initially at least, about this dreadful side of human nature, which seems to emerge every so often, where actually it's the horror which is quite clearly indescribable, and clearly you've been doing a lot of media work and interviews according to the demise of Charles Manson, the Charles Manson murders and the whole package that went along with that, which forever is... It's anchored a part of 60s culture in the mire, really, because it was not good.
Not at all. We were, as a matter of fact, the first TV crew on the scene the day the murders were discovered.
Yep.
We were sent to a house on Cielo Drive in Beverly Hills and thought it might have been some sort of movie mogul murder-suicide, but when we arrived, the gates were closed and there was a car right inside the gate with a body inside. That turned out to be the first victim at the Tate House, and really didn't know who lived there until Rona Barrett showed up. She was our gossip columnist for ABC, and I asked her, Miss Rona, what are you doing here? And she said, don't you know who lives here? And I said, no. She said, this is Roman Polanski's house. And that was a great uh-oh moment. And all of a sudden, media from all over the place, locally and some of the, entertainment media people started showing up, and it turned into quite a scene there. But we had no idea what we had, what we had stumbled into or what was inside the house.
And, of course, Roman Polanski has gone on to his other trials and tribulations in recent years, which we won't go into at this particular stage. But our mutual friend and colleague R.W. Saunders sent a lovely link to a piece that you actually did yesterday or recently with respect to the murders. I love the line when you actually said that you were picking up clothes, you were sorting things through. I mean, literally no crime scene scenario. I mean, it's just bizarre the way in which we kind of changed the whole notion of crime scenes, you know, in a matter of decades.
Well, Susan Atkins had turned as a prosecution witness for a time, and that was in December, and she took the police back to the house and walked them through how the murders were committed. And then she said we were all bloody, and we were wearing what Charlie told us and what he called creepy crawlers. And she said we threw them out of the car window, and that afternoon, a Monday afternoon, after the police had searched with Boy Scout walking arm in arm up and down hillsides, we were the first crew to report to Channel 7 that morning. And I said, well, let's go out there. They must still be looking. And we got there, and nobody was looking for anything. So in the afternoon, I begged the assignment desk to let us go back. I said, I've got an idea. And we started at the house, and I ran a stopwatch, and it took exactly 6 minutes and 30 seconds as we drove from where the murders took place on Cielo Drive. And sure enough, 6 minutes and 20 seconds, there was the only place there was a lip beside the road that you can pull all over and throw things out the window. And got out of the car and looked down there, and sure enough, there were blue jeans and sweatshirts down there. And those turned out to be the clothes they wore the night of the murders.
We were talking with our Jersey correspondent a few moments ago, Anna Lewis. That's actually Jersey Europe as opposed to New Jersey. Different line entirely. I often have to make it quite clear. But in terms of the obsession that we seem to have as a human race for the macabre, the evil doings, the lines of this, and you know, my first encountering of the Manson, I mean, very much as I said at the start of the piece, it's something which one cannot on one level actually begin to countenance how a mindset can develop. I mean, you could say the same possibly about Wacko, other sort of cult murders and various other sort of areas, but that particular element, does it sometimes depress you when you sort of think, why do people still have this obsession? Why can't we just basically let him die and so on?
Well, I never did agree with all the attempts that people made to interview him, because all he did was put a show on. Mm. He loved it. Mm. The reporters were cannon fodder in his eyes, and so what they did is they helped promote him. And I think, like you, they should have locked him up and let him go and don't pay that much attention to him. He loved it. He reveled in it. It made him into a hero of his own, you know, desire and own description. But he was pure evil, and the people who surrounded him, I mean, they now are come up for parole every now and then. But how could you say, oh, I'm, you know, that's okay, King's X, I didn't do that. You know, that was the other me. That was absolutely horrible. I mean, to kill an almost 9-month pregnant woman and cut her stomach open and, you know, mutilate people. I mean, it's unbelievable and inconceivable that people would want to go to the prison and interview him.
And then again, as I say, you go back to Jack the Ripper, you look at the size of this side of the Atlantic, that there is that bizarre fascination. Natalie, thoughts from yourself?
It's I'm speechless. Mm. I mean, it is shocking. I can understand why people would want to interview, because it's that curiosity, isn't it? They want to try and get some form of understanding, but at the same time, how do you understand that? Mm.
Well, I don't know that there's been any professional assessment ever done. I wouldn't mind hearing scientists who would try to, or psychiatrists or people who would try to interview him and learn something. But the media, there was no point to talking to him, because all he did, he tried to be menacing. He loved to jump around and scream at people, and especially female reporters. He would menace them with his eyes and lunge for them or something like that, you know, just to scare, and then he would laugh about what he did. I don't know. Pure evil, there it is. And who knows? I mean, at the time, that was so horrible, but now we have all these crazies, you know, who go to Las Vegas and see how many people they can kill and stuff like that. It's like, what is going on in this world?
The kindest thing you can say, I suspect, is it's a sickness, and it's a sickness that actually needs to be cured, and from a real sense, without going down to this particular line, ultimately that aspect of humanity is something which we need to eliminate. Otherwise, actually, the species itself might as well press the self-destruct button, and we say, well, that's it, we've given our shot, we'll hand back to the dinosaurs. Anyway.
Well, I subscribe to the Burt Bacharach song, What the World Needs Now.
Jeanette,
love, sweet love.
I think we'll work that. But we're going to take a brief musical break, if that's okay with yourself, Al. I want to move into more positive lines here, because we've had enough with the murder routine. I mean, we don't want to over-glamorise the whole system. That's already done through a whole range of other bits and pieces. Do you have a particularly favourite Beatles number that you'd like us to see, if we've got it in the computer system, as a kind of little segue to move from the Manson tragedy and evilness and so
on.
How
about Blackbird?
Do you know, that's an excellent choice. And I think it's all lined up now. So stay with us, Al. We'll be back with you after this.
Okay.
bird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the light of a dark black night. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the light of a dark black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
Which is the other side of the coin? The light side, which is where we move into now, because Al, one of the other sort of key claims to fame amongst, as we said, I mean, I still owe you three Emmy Awards, two Golden Globes, and a whole heap of others, but the Beatles story, which you narrated when you were working with the radio station KFWB Hollywood, the Beatles story album for Capitol Records, and of course, you were one of the early reporters who kind of experienced the whole notion of those lads from Liverpool have come to America and they've started doing good stuff.
It was, I was at the news conference in Los Angeles when they came to Los Angeles for a performance in the Hollywood Bowl. And the airport scene was pure bedlam. They held a news conference in the basement below the main terminal, and the main terminal was filled with young girls that were screaming and, oh, going crazy when they saw the Beatles deplane. And the news conference became bedlam, and I just grabbed my microphone and walked up to the front and knelt down beside Paul to try to ask a couple of questions, because it was, you know, everybody screaming, all of them were there, and all these reporters from all over the place, including the Hollywood press, made it into a bedlam thing. And then I actually went to the Hollywood Bowl for their concert, and I bluffed my way backstage using my LAPD press pass and worked my way. The concert was sponsored by KRLA, our competitor, and Bob Eubanks was the big DJ there, and he had a nightclub called Cinnamon Cinder, and they appeared there at a news conference. And then they had the concert, and I got backstage and then walked actually right to the edge of the stage. I wasn't out there where I'd be seen, and I started narrating what was going on. And it was, you couldn't hear the music for the screams. It was just an astounding moment there, and it's like, wow. I mean, the magic that they had and the way they performed and the music, I mean, they changed the world. think about it. They really did.
It's really interesting you mentioned that, and I would certainly actually draw people's attention to the Ron Howard movie, 8 Days a Week, which kind of captures in a documentary sense some of the excitement that's actually there. We're joined in the studio by Eva MacDonald. Eva, who's a young operatic singer and does all sorts of things, including actually having knives thrown at her in the summer. It was a variety thing. Don't worry, Alex.
It was.
It's not a strange British thing that we actually have the throwing of the knives at young women. It's lying.
Yeah, my manager didn't hate me that much. No,
very
hopefully.
Good. But Eva, as somebody who very much 21st century, what do you think about when we talk about the Beatles and what Al's just been describing there in terms of the I mean, we called it Beatlemania.
I think the Beatles, because they obviously were a big thing. If the Beatles, even now, they're still really popular and they're still always really talked about. I always listen to the Beatles. I quite like listening to their music. So it's definitely a Beatles mania thing. And I think it's still around today, really, because people still love the Beatles. So definitely Beatlemania everywhere.
For a band that I've said, oh, it's going to be peripheral and routine. I mean, I've heard various commentators, actually, Al, suggest that one of the reasons they went down so hugely in America, I mean, quite apart from the fact they say, what, we've already had Elvis Presley and Bill Haley sent over to us, now we're kind of exporting, repackaging it back from Britain to America. But was it in the aftermath of the Kennedy assassination that actually the youth of America at the time was really looking for some way of enthusing and finding that, you know, that capturing that energy, that dynamism, that youthfulness, that cheekiness without being insolent, was that really what kind of was paving the way for success for them?
Yes, but they really changed the music industry because they wrote their own songs. And I would have to go back and say they were the people that changed the music industry itself. Think about it. How many artists now today write their own songs? But young people identified with them, and they were fresh, they were new. The Beatle haircut, I mean, that became the standard in the United States. Mm. Everybody wanted to have a Beatle haircut. Mm. And the songs, the music that they composed, and they kept coming, one song after another, one album after another, and it was unique. It was a unique sound, and it was something that people had not had before, when you had this group and the image that they had. And I don't know, you know, a lot of parents wouldn't let their children watch Elvis Presley on
it was the hips. Exactly. You can't have the hips. You've got to keep the camera angle medium close up only and above the waist. I mean, you would have just driven. Natalie, if you were a young girl in 1950s America, clearly the very movement of Elvis Presley's hips on the screen could have driven you into a frenzy of uncontrollable uncertainties. It's just been wild.
I'll take your word for that one.
But Natalie, from your own perspective, again, familiar with the Beatles, undoubtedly, what are your thoughts on what we've been talking about? I mean, do you like the music? Do you sort of think, oh, yes, they did well?
Yes, yeah, I do like the music. And obviously, originally being from the north of the UK, mm-hmm. it was not far from where they originated from. Mm-hmm. So it was something that I was brought up with a little bit. And
so the northwest, how far away from Liverpool were you actually brought up there?
Preston in Lancashire.
Oh,
so
well, there we are.
It's about an hour away.
So you know how many holes there are in Blackburn, Lancashire?
I do.
As many holes that fill the Albert Hall. It's a reference. Well, we'll take it up in another line. We were very fortunate to run a feature with George Harrison's sister on the programme recently, Al. And again, she was instrumental in many ways in terms of breaking the Beatles in America. When you met Paul McCartney and you met the guys there, I mean, step aside for the frenzy and all of the other exciting things from that point of view, did you kind of get a sense of the fact that actually these were decent blokes? They were, you know, there was a kind of energy that was revitalizing folk?
I came away thinking, wow, I mean, these are nice people. And especially Paul, he was the one that I got closest to during that Bedlam news conference. He was genuine. He wasn't like some stars that you try to interview and they are snooty and they are kind of like above and they put down people. He was very likable, and no wonder people liked him. I mean, you heard him talk, he was genuinely engaged in a conversation. He wasn't trying to
and still is, of course,
over you, so to speak.
and still is. I mean, he makes a wonderful cameo in the latest Pirates of the Caribbean movie, actually, which is quite extraordinary. I thought, that's Paul McCartney, isn't it? Yes, it is Paul McCartney, actually, in the Pirates of the Caribbean movie. It's amazing. Al, stay with us for a few more moments. Let's give you another Beatles choice, and then we'll come back. Any particular Beatles track you'd like to sort of go for your next little selection?
Well, how about Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds?
Ah, yes, the classic one, which many people have actually said, it's all about LSD. That's what it's all about. No, we've constantly said, and in the words of George Harrison's sister, again, author, of course, of the fabulous My Kid Brother's Band, a.k.a. The Beatles, etc. It's great stuff there. Nothing to do with lysergic acid, diethylamide in any way, shape or form. I'm just echoing the line that came through from that particular perspective, whatever people might say.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Cellophane flowers of yellow and green towering over your head. Look for the girl with the sun in her eyes and she's gone. Lucy. People eat marshmallow pies. Everyone smiles as you drift past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore, waiting to take you. Train in a station with plasticine pauses with looking glass ties. Suddenly someone is there at the turnstile. The girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
I've got to say, it still has a timelessness. What do you think? Timelessness, Natalie? Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds? Timelessness, Eva?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
Second part of the programme, we'll be listening to Tchaikovsky with his Sugar Plum Fairy and other connections with the Los Angeles Youth Ballet artistic director Andrea Paris Gutierrez. And again, I think that tells us that it's good music, it stays there, and it's good that we can actually say we spent double the time on positivity as opposed to what we launched with, which was the, I won't even mention his name, but the murderer of Sharon Tate and other sort of folk within that whole system there. Any questions you'd like to put to Al from your own perspective, Natalie?
Well, the interesting thing to me when you played Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds is because the Beatles music is now the favorite of my 4-year-old grandson because of a cartoon series called Beat Bugs, and they have these little bugs that are little people, and each episode features a different Beatles song.
Hey, that's what we'd like to hear.
So now the music has gone through, you know, several generations, and now we have a four-year-old, and he's not the only one. That's a very popular cartoon. It's called Beat Bugs, and it's all Beatle music. If you haven't seen it,
I think we'll go.
You'll really enjoy
it. We'll double check Beat Bugs, not to be confused with Bed Bugs. That's a different line entirely, and you get those in New York. Different line. Al, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with yourself again. Natalie, did you have any questions you wanted to sort of raise at this stage?
Just see if Al's ever visited the UK.
Yes. Have you visited the UK, Al?
Well, it's my favorite place. Hey. I really love and I have to make it over there again soon because we're going to Italy next year. But London is my very favorite of all the destinations. I love London, and I love England. And I really like Stonehenge. I've been there twice now, and there's something about being there. There's something about London that there's an energy. German Street is my favorite.
There's a restaurant
down there that's one of the best in the world.
And lots of theatrical agencies as well in German Street. I, of course, will respond by saying an even more magical place in the UK, which you need to visit, is, of course, Lincoln in the East Midlands, because that's where we are now. And I think, you know, Lincoln, next time you're around, let's make a line for that, Al. Al, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for yourself?
It has been fantastic. I really enjoy talking with you, and I really like your program format. How interesting, how fabulous. And if I can get over there anytime soon, don't worry, I'll look you up.
Hey, this is good news. So I take it then you'd be kind enough to join us again telephonically from St. Louis in the near future.
Anytime you want to chat or want to talk to an old timer, here I am.
Well, I think we don't use the O word. We just become more chronologically gifted or experientially enhanced. That's the important thing there. And actually, hats off to your daughter Claire as well, who we might be looking to feature as well. And the whole tour team is there. The Siren News team are beginning to assemble for the news at 5:45. And now, having said those last two questions, we simply have to say a round of applause for Al Wyman, please. Yay!